Okay, we're testing, testing, testing. This is Madeline interviewing BJ, June 28th, 1982. Back. Okay.
I hereby give the Buffalo Woman's Oral History Project the tape recorded on June 28th, 1982, for such a educational and scholarly uses and purposes as the directors Elizabeth Kennedy and Madeline Davis shall determine. I fully consent to the transcription and publication of any of all or all of this interview as educational and scholarly work required. I have been assured that only the name BJ will be employed in any use of this tape. I understand that as further date, the tapes will be housed in an archive chosen by the directors of the Buffalo Woman's Oral History Project and will be available for public access governed by the rules of the archive. I give consent that these tapes to be made available for research purposes immediately after the date of the last interview.
Great. Okay. We'll talk about a lot of different topics, and I may take notes, and the reason I'm taking notes is to go back, you know, so I don't have to stop you in the middle of telling a story. So that's what I'm doing notes on. And you can see anything that I write. You can see any of the writing that we do, you know. Our narrators have first access to the information that they give us. You were not born in Buffalo, right?
No. I was born in Canada, and then I lived in Syracuse on Indian Reservation for a while.
Oh, are you Native American?
No, I'm Native Canadian.
How did you get to live on a reservation?
Well, when I was very young, my mother came here, and she lived on the Onondaga Reservation from the bush up in Canada, because I was born on a reservation in Canada.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder how that worked without being Native American and being born on a reservation. She just lived there.
Yeah, I haven't even got a birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Because where I was born is a patrilineal tribe. And my father was white. And so I didn't get put into the... I didn't get a band number because my father wasn't Indian at that time.
Oh.
So I haven't got proof of my birth, which I'm going through hell to get now.
Yeah.
And I've got some Indian associations trying to help me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably a Canadian citizen that just lived in the United States all their life.
Isn't that fun? Strange. So you lived on a reservation near Syracuse?
Yeah, on a Onondaga Reservation. It's right in Nedro, New York.
Uh-huh.
Then we moved to James Street.
And that's in Syracuse?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And my mother was married when I was very young, about 2 or 3. And I had a stepfather. And I was always tomboy.
Uh-huh. Do you have any sisters or brothers?
13 sisters and 1 brother.
Holy crap. My God.
Very poor family.
That's a crowd.
Very poor family. I was the second.
And the one older than you was?
I lived with
a girl?
My grandmother on the reservation.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada. She was there.
Uh-huh. And all the other kids lived together with you
here
and your mom?
Yeah.
And
my mother died when she was 36. She had those children before she was 36 years old.
There was a busy woman.
Well, it got handed down to the oldest and then the next oldest. You know.
To
all
take care of the family?
All
uh-huh. Did your mother work outside the home?
Yes, my stepfather didn't like working too much, so my mother did the work. She worked in laundry as a presser.
Mm-hmm.
So she was put in the hospital a few times.
Uh-huh.
My stepfather was brutal.
Was he physically cruel to
you? He was physically cruel to my mother. He proved to his own children to me, very close to me.
When did you, well, you said you were a tomboy from when you were very young. Was there any point you can remember where you felt differently from the way you thought you were supposed to be feeling as a girl?
Not until I was in school and I was with the other girls. I didn't play with the other girls. I played with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found this place in Syracuse. She was called the Elite when I was very young, 12, 13. And my English teacher was sitting in this place, and I adored her.
Uh-huh.
And it was a gay bar. It was the Elite on Fayette Avenue. And I used to go there and stay and hang around the bar and everything. And I don't know if I was that gay tendency then, but I liked the people. And shortly after that, I got involved with a woman that was going there about a year after that. They used to get shooed out of the bar or driven home. I was even losing for myself.
You were 13. What year was that?
Oh, 1953.
So you were born in 1940?
40.
When's your birthday?
July 23rd.
Oh, mine's the 7th, and I was born in 1940, the same age. You got involved with a woman. Did you know you were attracted to girls when you were in grammar school, when you were younger?
No, it's gonna feel funny, sound funny if I say this. But I think I was like a young boy that didn't want to be bothered with any kind of sexual thing.
Uh-huh.
And
that
I was just
funny.
Playing baseball and football and basketball, very athletic.
Uh-huh.
All my life. And fighting on the streets. I was ahead of a gang. It was a black gang because I lived in a black neighborhood. And it was very hard to get there because all the schools I went to were black because we were so poor that we couldn't get good housing.
Yeah.
So we had to settle for whatever we got. And first time, I was 7 years old when I was going to school, and I was way behind in school because I had leukemia. I had rheumatic fever.
Uh-huh.
And I had a relapse. And I didn't start school till I was 7. So kids can be cruel. And they kind of, that's when my mother died, I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
They would beat me up. So one day I walked in my house crying. My mother beat me up and sent me back outside. And that's the day that I guess I got a little stronger and a little rougher. And I became a head of a gang by the time I was 11.
And the gang was boys?
Boys, black gang.
Did they know you were a girl?
Sure. They never bothered me, though.
You must have been really tough by the time you were 11.
Yeah.
To be head of a gang. That's rough stuff. What did the gang do besides hang out?
We fought Tipperary Hill Gang.
What was the name of your gang?
The Aces, the Black Aces. The only white person is the head of the gang.
That's wild.
It was. I think of a lot of things that were real funny when I was a kid.
What made you go to the Elite?
Well, I don't know. I didn't live too far from there. I lived on St. James Street, and that was maybe 6 blocks from there, near the Boulevard, Erie Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to eat at the restaurant near Erie Boulevard, and I used to see butches and friends come in, because they fraternized the place because they were so close. It was open all night, the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
the diner. The truckers usually went there. And so I was always inquisitive. I was a bad kid. And I started going around the bar, and I seen, well, Cha, I won't mention her, the old man.
Mm-hmm.
And she was an English teacher of mine, and I seen Cha, and I walked in. And I says, uh-huh. And I knew what was happening because I had I had a gay aunt.
Oh.
And she had a butch that died, but she never went with anybody else, so.
How'd you know she was gay?
Because the words my grandmother would call her, like, I got a queer daughter. This I found out later, you know, but things she talked about, and I would not be able to be in the room. Also, she never said to me what my grandmother did, because my grandmother had been torched small. And so I learned what queer meant, you know, and...
About how old were you when you recognized
11,
that they were telling
11.
You about somebody who...
Yeah, because Aunt Marge, I loved her.
Uh-huh.
I loved her.
Mm-hmm.
And her friend I knew too, and she was always nice. She was my second aunt, like.
Mm-hmm.
And where it really hit me is when I was about 11 or 12 years old. 11, I think. My grandmother says, why do you like her? And I think her name was Anne. I says, I like her. I think she's sharp. Because she's a tomboy like you? I said, no, she's the queer you always said she was.
Ooh.
And my grandmother said, I think. Then when I was about 13 and a half, I had my first relationship. It wasn't a long relationship. It was just a relationship with an older woman, I'd say about 20 years old.
So you were 13 and a half, she was 20. And how'd you meet her?
I met her at the Eli, and Cha used to say, get out of here. I don't want you here. Well, Cha wasn't there one night, and I was sitting there acting like Cha. Because I always wore black denim pants or dungarees, motorcycle boots, and a jacket. And I was sitting there, and maybe I looked older, or maybe I looked real young, I don't know, at that age, but this girl was drinking, and I bought her a drink. And Izzy says, get out of my bar, because I wasn't supposed to buy a drink. My girl found out I was too young to be in the bar, and I didn't tell her my age at all. And I started seeing her outside of the bar, so I wouldn't go to the bar and this and that. As I look back on it, maybe it was her way of keeping me out of the bar.
Mm-hmm.
But I got really attached to her. And I talked to somebody else. Like, I talked to Anne, and I talked to Anne's friend. And she says, you don't want to be gay, it's too hard of a life. And I said, yes, I do. So it's just that I guess I was aware of it. I wasn't born gay. I just was aware of both kinds of life, and I just chose one.
Mm-hmm.
And I contemplated, even at that age, a long time about what kind of life I wanted, what kind of things I wanted to do. I probably made some mistakes, but I did mainly through my whole life what I wanted to do. And I did it the easiest way I knew how. I found a way of doing anything I wanted to do the easiest way I knew how.
After you met that woman in the bar, excuse me, and bought her a drink, you obviously wanted to see her again, or she wanted to see you again. How did you make that happen?
Well, I think the first night I gave her one kiss, and it felt kind of funny, you know, because I said, I don't know how to do this, so I'm going to talk to somebody.
Huh?
So I talked to Anne, wouldn't talk to me at all about it. That's my aunt's
lover. Your aunt's lover.
Mm-hmm. And so I tried to talk to Cha wouldn't talk to me at all about it. But there was a couple younger kids, about 16 and 17, that weren't allowed in the bar, so we were like a gang of our own, because we could be closer. You seemed to be closer because you were set in a clan where you weren't allowed in the bar, so each one of us sneaked each one in. So we were kind of close, and the two ahead of me had relationships. And every time they asked me my age, I'd tell them 15, 16. And I knew they were older than me, but I didn't look any 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I started talking to Jeannie, and Jeannie told me that you do this and you do that. And so I guess my first time, I didn't do things too well because somebody was showing me how.
Uh-huh. Can you talk about what they said to do? Because that's one of the things that we want to know, is how people learn about sex.
Well, Jimmy says you kiss them. I had already masturbated, so she says, have you ever masturbated?
Uh-huh.
I said, yes. And she says, you do the same thing like to a girl that you would do to yourself. And she told me about, now this is the first time I learned about or heard about going down on a girl. And I said, what? But I made a date with this girl two or three times, and then we made a date where I got a motel key. I had somebody go get me a motel key.
You're resourceful. Great.
And I was in her car, and we were riding around, and I says, would you like to go somewhere to talk? And I threw the motel key down, and she didn't say no. So went to the motel, and I think I learned a little bit more than what I did talking.
I'm sure you did. Did she tell you what to do?
Yeah, and she told me what to do and how to do it, some ways how to do it. I was very naive on a lot of things. And that's the only woman, I think, that touched me so lately,
mm-hmm.
sexually.
Uh-huh.
And she showed me how by showing me on me.
Uh-huh.
And reciprocated. Then I met different type of women. Three or four times my 14-year-old lover, my 14-year lover touched me. That was all.
So the woman that you slept with for the first time, was she butch or femme or neither?
She was neither. She was she was a student at SU.
Mm-hmm.
And we were together. We kept seeing each other for 4 or 5 months, 6 months. Then something happened in my life that just sort of tore us apart. Just tore us apart. She was a student at SU, and she was studying, and she was very feminine looking. She was very much feminine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she probably liked me because I was so tomboyish. So she probably liked butches.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I surprised her when she found out I didn't know what I was doing at all.
Uh-huh. Throughout that whole 4 or 5 month relationship, was the sex always mutual?
Yeah.
So that continued right through?
Yeah.
You both made love to each other?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And did you like that?
Yeah, I did. I had never had an unpleasant experience at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was warm, tender. It's something I never had in my whole life. I found something, this is going to sound funny, but I found something in my bed that I couldn't find in my whole life. I found the warmth and a release from my daily tensions with my family. I say tensions now, I didn't know what it was. I constantly had a stepfather who was either abusing one of the kids. I ended up shooting him.
Killing him or just injuring him?
I shot him through the chest. I didn't tell him to kill.
Uh-huh.
That's how we broke up. My stepfather came home one night drunk. And my mother was home. The kids were sent out. I went to go out with the kids, and my father said, you stay here. And my mother said, don't touch her. And my father slapped me for no reason at all that I could understand at that time. Nobody would have understood it because I don't even know why I got slapped. And he slapped me bad. He slapped me back in and busted my face open. And my mother went after him. The first time I ever seen my mother was always scared to death of him. And this is the first time I seen my mother go after him. And she had the iron in her hand. She was going to hit him with the iron. He beat my mother so bad. I tried to pick up something to hit him. He was in a rage. And he beat me so bad. And he told me he was going to teach me what a woman should be like. And he raped me. And he raped me in a very bad way. And I had gone to the hospital. I was there a month. He tore me close to it. And that ruined my sex life, I think, for a woman, too. So I was home after that, and I'll tell you, I was scared. And he came to the door. My mother told him to leave, and he hit my mother. And that was the last time he ever hit my mother, because I picked up the shotgun, and I let both girls go. And I went to court for that, and the judge, and I know to this day I would never have been sent away because they knew the circumstances. He was under indictment with grand jury because of what he did to me. And he hit my mother, and that was the last straw. And I just shot him. Because then, I think they shot him not only out of hate, but fear. And I never knew a man before that. And I never knew a man after that. Except after I got older, I learned that there's different human beings in the world than you. I got very close to some men. Very close. I never had sex with them. They didn't know I was a woman, though, at the time. And when they did find out, I was surprised. Some accepted it very readily, and some won't even talk to me anymore. But some were amazed that I did some of the things I did. So that's how my first affair and I never seen each other again. Because I was sent to Albany. Well, first Hudson and then to Albany.
Oh, Hudson was for underage. And was Albion for adults?
16 years old.
Uh-huh. What was it like for you there?
Oh, first of all, they had most of my records, and there's people like that know they get into your records in those circumstances. And well, before I even hit the campus, what they call the campus, at Albion, they knew I was gay outside, so I was supposed to be the gay butch inside. So it worked out pretty well because I ended up with hardly no money coming in from the families or anything, my family, that I was one of the well-kept people. Because I had girls here and there that I only talked to with a line. And they, I would get all kinds of commentary. So it worked out all right. You learned to survive.
Yeah, I bet you did. How did you learn to adjust in a jail situation like that? You know? Like, did you meet somebody who showed you the ropes? Or?
I was a smart aleck kid. Mm-hmm. And I had already had my first experience. And in 6 months when I was there, within the first 3-4 months when I was there, I had some inkling, because I had been around, that a couple of the officers also were gay. Mm-hmm. One I wouldn't even touch, because I knew she wasn't the type I wanted. In other words, she just puts. But this couple of them, I caught one, I was in the reception kitchen. And I caught one in the reception kitchen that used to bring me, not caught her doing anything, I just made love to her. And she started bringing me in razor blades that I wanted and things I wanted. So I learned very quickly there was ways of getting things I wanted. And it's easier to get them from an officer that goes in and out of the gates every day than it is to get it from an inmate that's inside. In fact, I used to get things from my friends. That's bad to say, I know. It sounds like I'm patting myself on the back. But I used everything I could from the time I was the youngest, from way back that I could. When I was real young, I learned that I had to survive. And it was, and then when I got older, I learned I could survive a little more comfortable. Like in jail, I used sex sometimes. Sometimes I didn't. I could use a line in the hair and get what I wanted. And I needed, so I got what I wanted.
So you carried on this relationship with one of the officers, and did you, and you also had relationships with some of the inmates too?
No, I had two officers I was having relationships with, sexual relationships, verbal relationships with many inmates, because I wasn't about to go to SAG and get more time. Because for at that time, when I was in jail, you could get an added sentence for any homosexual actions, and I wasn't about to.
Did the three women you were having affairs with, the three officers, know about each other?
Nope.
Very clever. God, how'd you manage that?
They weren't going to tell on each other. It was their job. Uh-huh. They would lose their job if the same. Somebody, I met this one, just let's use three different names, okay. Anne met Marie. She's not going to say, well, guess what? I got this butch that's going with me. You know that little snotty kid, you know?
Right.
She's not going to say that because she could lose her job.
So you manipulated all three of them for how long were you in?
Up to the time I was 17. I came there, when it, no, 17 and a half. I only had 3 months on parole when I got out.
So you were at Hudson for?
About, I'd say a year.
And then another year and a half at Elvin? Was it a year and a half at Elvin?
Year and a half, 2 years, almost 2 years at Elvin.
So you were in, on the inside for
yeah.
3 years?
I got a funny sentence. It was 1 to 3, or it was till I was 18.
Uh-huh.
And what happened, it wouldn't have been as long, but my mother died while I was in jail. And when I came, that was the funny thing, when I came home to the funeral parlor, my stepfather was there, and I hated him.
Yeah.
And I was crazy at that time. Things would kick me off, and he said, I'm sorry your mother did, died to me. He probably meant it, but at that stage, I said to him, you're the one that killed her. And I started in the funeral home. I put a chair up against his head. The guards had to take me out of the funeral home. My mother was a beautiful woman. She looked like my grandmother in the coffin when she was only 6 years old.
And she died of leukemia?
Leukemia, yeah. She was in very bad shape. And she had, basically, she died from leukemia. She was very weak. And she tried to get out of her own bed, and she fell and hit her head. And the fall must killed her, but it was basically leukemia because she was so weak.
So when you got out, you were 18.
Well, almost 18. Because
mm-hmm.
I got out on parole because when I was very, very young, I was 3 or 4 years old, this woman took care of me that lived right outside the reservation. And her name was, I always called her Grandma Smith. She was a beautiful person. I can't relate her with my family because I had a hell of a family life, but she was a beautiful person. She was a different part of life. And I used to go back and see her. My stepfather beat me so bad one day. I went back and see her and I had 2 black eyes. And she asked me what was wrong, and her 2 sons, one was a sheriff and one was a minister, and they went to call on my father, my stepfather. And she asked me to stay, but my mother would not have me stay. And told me if I ever needed her to come to her. And it was a very funny thing. After all the years I didn't see her, she came and she was a visitor. I never had a visitor once when I was in jail. And they said, you have a visitor. And I said, who's visiting me? And I said, I never had a visitor. And I went out, and it was this little old lady named Grandma Smith. She gave me a hug, and she said, why didn't you have somebody get in touch with me? I would have got you out of this horrible place years ago. And she worked to get me out on parole and live with her. And she only was a foster mother of mine when I was a baby.
So when you did get out, you went and lived with her.
Mm-hmm.
And you started living a gay life.
Yeah. And I lived with her 6 months, and I said, Grandma, well, 3 to 6 months, and I said, Grandma Smith? And she said, yes. And I says, I got to tell you something. I couldn't tell anybody else, but I had to tell her, because I never lied to her. I never lied to that woman. I never even deceived her. And at that point in my life, I had deceived and lied and cheated and fought, and capable of murder. I'll tell you, I was really bitter. But I said, Grandma, I never lied to you, and I got to tell you something. And she said, whatever you tell me won't shock me. It's a very old, wise woman. I got my feelings hurt by telling her. She says, go ahead and tell me. I says, Grandma, do you know what gay is? She says, yeah, happy. That's how versed you were. And I said, no. And it was very hard to explain to her. I said, well, did you ever hear of two women going together? And she said, oh, you're queer.
And she knew that word.
So I says, yeah, Grandma, but I hope you don't dislike me. She says, well, you have to make the bed and you have to lie in it. I do not have to follow your footprints. She was Indian and white too, but she was a very wise woman. After that, I couldn't kiss her goodnight anymore. I could kiss her on the forehead, but not anywhere around the mouth.
was that her
that
choice?
Her choice.
Her choice.
But then I had been going with Barbara in jail. And she came home. It was a funny thing. She came home, found out where I was living. She got parole too, because of me. And she came to my apartment, and we started things. It was a different relationship than in jail, naturally.
In jail, you didn't have a sexual relationship
no.
with her?
And a kiss or this or that. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
She came over to my house and she said she wanted to see me, and we seen each other, and because I lived only 2 blocks from her parents' business. They owned a restaurant and 2 hotels in Syracuse. She was a Jewish girl. And I think it was wrong of people to send their children away for misbehaving or running away. I really do. Because they learn things they never should learn. They learn from drugs, prostitution, and everything in institutions. So she kept coming over to see me, and she was a year older than I was. And her aunt met me in my boyish clothes, and this and that. And Barbara said, I can't stay home, I want to be with you. So we started living together, knowing she was broken parole, and the police came to my door, and we took a cab to Rochester. And from Rochester, we come to Buffalo. Then I found out it was very hard to work, so I took on a male identity.
You see, what year did you come to Buffalo then?
1958. Mm-hmm.
58, yeah. Did you think about looking for other gay people?
No. We got an apartment. I was dressed as a man. I went looking for a job as a young man. And I landed 2 jobs, but One came sooner than the other. One was a busboy, working as a busboy in Chesney. And I was here about 2 months, and we got ourselves pretty well settled, and she became a salad girl, and I was a busboy.
Both
and
of
they
the
thought
kids.
We were a nice married couple.
Uh-huh.
And I went to, I was working during the day, then I went to work as a carpenter's helper in the daytime, and I was working nights. So we'd get ahead. And I kept the Chesney to the Chesney almost closed. And I went to the Stuyvesant Plaza, mm-hmm. Stuyvesant Hotel.
Right.
And I worked there. Bob Downing was my, did you remember the piano player named
yeah.
Bob Downing?
I remember who he was.
He was a very good friend of ours. Uh-huh. He became a very good friend of ours. He got me a job with Darwin Martin at Stuyvesant. Darwin Martin owned the Stuyvesant. And I was a waiter at the Stuyvesant. I became a maitre d' at the Stuyvesant. I was named after Carl Letourneau. And I was still working my daytime job. I went from carpenter's helper to carpenter and then top mechanic for my boss, which was very old, and he had trained me in everything he did.
Mm-hmm. But you did find gay bars in Buffalo eventually.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't too long after I started at the Chesney. I met this girl named Pat. And I revealed, that's the first gay person I revealed myself to in Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
And she says, well, why don't you come down to the bars and this and that? And we frequent the bars after that, maybe every weekend. But all I had to fear of always being seen, going in and out.
And being discovered.
At the gay bars. Because even if you were straight at that time, and you could say you were straight and you understood the gay people, nobody would have believed you. So it went that way for 14 years, 15 years with Barbara. And we were in and out of the gay bars. Gay bars were much, the people were different, completely different.
How did you meet Pat?
Well, Pat, I think, was in Hughes cab. There's this guy named Hughes. He used to drive a big limousine. And he used to pick up fares at night
mm-hmm.
at the Chesney. And Pat was in Hughes cab and we wanted to go home. So Hughes drove us home. And we just from talking, we asked her if we could meet her for coffee or something. She might have thought it was odd, but Barbara and I looked at each other, and that's all we had to do. And I got her consent to ask her, you know. And I asked her if we could meet her for coffee. We discussed us, Barbara and I, being gay, but we didn't know any gay people. And she brought us to the Wonder Bar, not the Wonder Bar, the Chesterfield and the Midtown Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And she was living with little feet.
Yeah. Right. So she, when you first got into the cab, she thought you were a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you made the appointment to meet her for coffee, she still thought this was a heterosexual couple.
Yes, and when I made the appointment, she thought it was a little funny, so she had Barbara reinforce the appointment because I think she thought I was coming on to her, you know, as a male. And I really wasn't. I just wanted to talk to her away from somebody that was close to the business.
Sure. What was her reaction when you told her?
Oh, Jesus, I should have known. You know, Pat. Oh, Jesus, I should have known.
It's funny. We always think that we should know, you
right.
know, that we're gay, that everybody else is gay, and we really, you know, we really don't.
Well, I was in a lot of weightlifting and everything because I was always skinny, you know, skinny. But I was in weightlifting and stuff to build my body. My body was like a rock at that age. I was running and weightlifting and swimming a lot,
mm-hmm.
playing golf, bowling, all sports.
Mm-hmm. When you worked at the at the Chez and then the Stuyvesant, of course, you wore uniforms and
Oh, yeah. Tuxedo, pants, cummerbund.
So you could cover your body. What about working with guys in construction and stuff like that? They take their shirts off.
Well, I always left mine on. I wore a binder, and then I didn't have to wear a binder too much because I'm not big now. I'm very small now, and I'm over 40, and I never expanded, so my last lover taught me to wear a bra. I don't know why this happened. It seems I moved after 40.
Well, you were probably holding yourself in with the binder.
Yeah, well, when I was younger, then I got so I didn't even have to wear it. But I still couldn't go without a t-shirt because the nipples on my breast were too large.
Mm-hmm.
And the man's are very small.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to realize that you had to wear a binder? And what?
Well, when I was younger, I learned that you could wear a binder, that your nipples are nothing to show. And I was very, at that time, I was very, not shy. I wanted to hide everything, so I was. And at that time, I wouldn't have had to wear one either.
Mm-hmm.
I wore one, and then I stopped wearing one very shortly because in dress shirts, I never showed.
Right.
And if I learned one trick of the trade. If I wore a very hard, tight undershirt, nothing showed outside. So instead of taking a medium undershirt, I'd take a small, and nothing would show.
Uh-huh.
Now, I didn't leave the male role until a year ago. And geez, that's been 57 to 81 that I was in the male role and fully accepted in the male role.
It's 24 years.
Well, 24
years. That is a hell of a long time to pass. When you went to the gay bars those first times, how, you were dressing as a man?
Oh, yeah.
And of course, butches were dressing real male.
Yeah.
And you were accepted how, as a man?
Very much better than I am now, than I was the last 5 years. Very much better. I was into my own thing. Nobody cared. If you were gay, you were gay. Nobody cared as long as you didn't infringe on their happiness or infringe on them in any way. You were accepted for what you were. You were closer. It seemed like you were knitted closer together. I don't know if it was just because you were gay, but if you hit one gay girl, you hit them all. And that's how we got in a fight, Pat and I and Gabe. Oh, Pat came in the last of the fight, got through it out the door, at 90. A girl named Pat Covey had an argument with a motorcycle guy that was at the Midtown. The argument started there, but there was about 30 or 40 butches that got up, so I didn't think he wanted to pursue it. But we went to Dante's afterwards, Gabe and I, my lover and Gabe's lover, went to Dante's after to dinner, and they happened to be in there, and they started with us, and we had a hell of a fight. Pat came in the door, got thrown out the door. Didn't even know what was happening. And we had a heck of a fight. It was harder. And that's, I think, the main reason I went into a closet, so I would be accepted. I went into my own closet. I went into the male role. And thank God I was good at it because it gave me something, material things. And it didn't really take from my happiness because I'm very monogamous. And whoever I lived with understood I was a woman completely. And it was my way of finding to do it the best way I knew how.
So you mostly lived as a man with occasional
visits to
the gay bar.
I wouldn't even go to a woman's toilet in the gay bar.
Did you use the men's
toilet? You know why? Because if there was an outside man that might, like, for a long time, though, the villa was across the street on Main Street.
Yes.
I used to go there when it was patronized. It was on Lock Gate.
Yes.
And they patronized gay people. When they were patronized, I would not use and at the one bar, I would not use the women's room because there was too much of it.